Matthew chapter 5, and we begin to read in verse 33. Jesus says, "Again, ye have heard that it hath been said by them of old time, Thou shalt not forswear thyself, but shalt perform unto the Lord thine oaths. But I say unto you, swear not at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by earth, for it is his footstool, neither by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Neither shalt thou swear by thy head, because thou canst not makest one hair white or black. But let your communication be yea, yea, nay, nay, for whatsoever is more than these cometh of evil." We notice that he said in verse 33, "Thou shalt not forswear thyself." And that's simply meaning thou shalt not make false vows or speak falsehoods, is all he's saying. And when it gets right down to it, this text is just dealing with the subject of truthfulness, or the subject of being a person of your word, in agreements, and this sort of thing, not speaking falsehoods, not dealing deceptively, and these sort of things. In the Old Testament, both before the law was brought and after the law was brought, and then all the way into the New Testament, God's people are seen a number of times giving their word or making an oath in the name of God. In other words, like in Genesis chapter 14, Abraham told the king of Sodom, and I wrote these down here. He says, "I lift up mine hand unto the Lord, the Most High God, the possessor of heaven and earth, that I will not take from a thread even to a shoe latchet, and that I will not take anything that is thine." And so in essence, what Moses did was he said he raised his hand to the Lord. "God is my witness," basically is what he was saying. And then he made that statement to the king of Sodom, Abimelech, saying, I give you my word, and as God is my witness, that I'll never do you harm, you see. So that's an example before the law. And then, of course, the law came, and it has some speaks about oaths, but nothing any different than what Moses did, what Abraham did here, and David. And then you find people. One example is David and Jonathan. When they were covenanted together, their friendship, they said, "Let the Lord even require it." And so it very again the same thing, making agreement and a covenant, or making a statement, saying that God is my witness that what I'm saying to you is true, or what I'm agreeing with you about will be followed through. And so this has happened multiple times, you find throughout Scripture, people inviting God to be the witness to their statements or their agreement. And it was though it's not stated in the law that you should do this, it's something that was done. And God allowed it, because in Leviticus 19:12, he says, "You shall not swear by my name falsely." So in other words, if he says you shall not swear by my name falsely, he must say it's okay to swear by my name truthfully. So there again, it was just a practice. It was a part of Jewish life to make these statements and use God, or say, "God is my witness," this sort of thing. In the New Testament, in Hebrews chapter 6 and verse 16, it says, "For men swear by the greater," speaking of swearing by God, "and give an oath for confirmation." There again, New Testament explaining that, hey, when somebody swears by God, that's a confirmation of the truthfulness of their word. And so this became very common practice throughout the ancient times. And there was a twofold effect to swearing by God's name, or swearing "God is my witness" type deal. The first effect was it lent credibility to the person's testimony that was saying it. It served as a kind of a swearing in, if you will, like they do in the court of law. This person is willing to say, "God is my witness," or "I raise my hand to God." If they're willing to say that, they must be pretty serious. Now, it's not foolproof, obviously, but it's holding people to a higher power, so to speak. And so the second effect to that would be, is by saying that, They're inviting God into the equation and would risk penalty or punishment or judgment by God if they were to be swearing falsely or if they were to break this agreement. It's kind of, let me illustrate it like this. It's kind of like what they do in today's court of law and what they've done now for many centuries. We have a similar procedure in court hearings or in trials and this sort of thing. A person is called as a witness, and that person is sworn in. They raise their hand, one hand on the Bible, the other hand, they say, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? And they say, I do. And then they give their testimony. And by doing that, that is used, again, it's not foolproof, but it's expecting that person to be as honest. It's as close as we can get to making somebody be honest, because there is risk of perjury, which would bring great consequence and penalty to a person that perjures himself. So, again, not foolproof. Can't guarantee that the person is lying, telling the truth. But it's most likely people, if they're going to be honest, they're going to be honest then, because they know there's penalty, of a criminal penalty awaiting them if they perjure themselves, okay? So clearly, that's the same kind of approach to swearing by the name of God. If somebody's going to, you know, we say, I put my hand on the Bible. Well, that's the ideal is, hey, I'll be accountable to God. God is my witness. What I'm saying right now is true. If a person is willing to say that, they're likely to be being more credible. Okay. Now, early on in Jewish history, when there were men like Abraham and David and Jonathan, and when they gave those type oaths in the name of God, it was a very effective method. As time went on, like so many different things that started out good and then eventually turned bad, so did this practice. Over time, the religious Jews began to alter and to modify this oath-making process to better suit their taste and to make it a little bit easier to be deceptive. And the first thing they began to do was to use this kind of oath for the most trivial of things, things that weren't circumstances that weren't really serious, weren't even necessary to give your word on. They would just flippantly say, you know, well, I do it in the name of this, or I do it in the name of that, when it really didn't even require it. And so in time, what happened is it was being used so much for just little things that it became meaningless. It became kind of a shallow, not even considered an oath, just kind of a tongue-in-cheek, kind of just words is what it began. And so it was it began to be taken less seriously. And you know what? We even hear statements today like this. We flippantly say sometimes, God is my witness, without really truly in our heart and mind thinking, you know, I want them to know that God's witness. You know what I mean? We say it, God is my witness I did this. Or we might say, by God, if I say I'm going to do this, that's swearing by God, then I'm going to do it. When in reality, we haven't really put the thought to it that what we're saying is being calling God as the witness to what we're saying. And so, you see, those things have even, after all these centuries, a part of our culture and our language that is really kind of flippant. We're not really calling God as our witness when we say those things. And most of us likely maybe don't do that, but we know that it is said. What had happened over the course of time, the Jews just began to use it so trivially and flippantly that it just became not an issue, not something that was really considered an oath. And the second thing that happened over time with the Jews is it kind of evolved, and they began to swear by things beside the Lord. They would swear by they would swear by heaven, or they would swear by earth, or they would swear by the temple They swore by the gold of the temple. Jesus mentions that. They would swear by Jerusalem. They would swear by the hairs of their head. And that's why even in verse 36 here, if you'll read again, he says, neither shalt thou swear by thy head, because thou canst make one hair white or black. People, they became so silly that they were ridiculous. They were saying, I swear by the hair of my head. And that's, Jesus even addresses this. And what was taking place here, they were swearing in a way that it was just a waste of time. It just evolved into something, and it accommodated their desires to fudge on things and to break truces, or not truces, but covenants or agreements, to deal in a shadier type manner in order to get ahead. What it boiled down to was they would think to themselves, as self-righteous Jews have done, we've seen multiple times, they would think, well, I'm not swearing by God when I say this. If I swear by the temple, or I swear by Jerusalem, or I swear by the earth, I'm not swearing by God. And so it's kind of flexible whether I follow through or not. And so all of those things, they begin to evolve over the centuries. You got to think this goes way back to Abraham all the way up to the days of Jesus. So you're talking about centuries, millennium. And so they had evolved to the point that Jesus is having to deal with this. In their mind, these religious Jews in Jesus' time, who he's addressing here, in their mind, as long as they weren't holding God as witness, it was a non-binding contract, or the statement was they weren't going to be held to it. Whatever statement they were making, it was just not a true agreement. That's how they rationalized. And if it were some sort of testimony that, hey, you know, I just said that flippantly and this sort of thing. And so it's just what they did is they took God's standard, his high standard of truthfulness and honesty, and they just brought it real low, like man always does, into something that they could use to suit themselves and their own self-interest. And so that's what Jesus is addressing here when he talks about swearing by heaven and swearing by earth and swearing by Jerusalem and this sort of thing. He's simply saying, you know, where does all this come from? He says he's not in this text, he's not condemning the use of oaths altogether, but rather he's condemning the frivolous use that it had evolved into. And the Jewish tradition had taken it to a level it was never supposed to go to. And so let me read to you what William Hendrickson, his commentary on this, says about this. He says, what we have here in Matthew 5, 33-37, is the condemnation of the flippant, profane, uncalled for, often hypocritical oath used in order to make an impression or to just spice up daily conversation. Instead, Jesus commends simple truthfulness in thought and word and deed. And that's what he ends this text with, is basically at the end of the verse 37, he says, let your yea be yea and your nay be nay. And in whatsoever is more than that of these comes of evil. He's just saying, be honest. He's saying, be a person of your word. Conduct yourself in such a way and have such a reputation and a testimony that when you say yes, it's taken as a yes. And when you say no, you're known well enough, your testimony is strong enough that the people will say, well, yeah, it must be no, because he said no, and this sort of thing. And it's at the cost of judgment, if you will. Beyond this, let's read verse 37 again. He says, let your communication be yea, yea, nay, nay, for whatsoever is more than these cometh of evil. In other words, he's saying, whatever is beyond that, all the oaths and all the promises and all of this stuff is unnecessary. Just let your word be yea, yea, or nay, nay. If you're doing what you're supposed to do, if we're handling ourselves and conducting ourselves in our life in a way of integrity and honesty consistently, that ought to be enough. And the credibility will just be there, okay? Now, obviously, I don't think Jesus is in any way, form, or fashion saying that what we do in the court of law, the swearing in of people and this sort of thing is out of line. I don't think at all that's what this is saying. But he's just calling these Jews out of their self-righteousness to just in their shady practices and their ways of manipulating the things of God to just, hey, just be honest people and quit making all these oaths and swearing by all these things. Let me read to you what William Barclay says here in closing, and his commentary on this particular subject. He says, here is a great eternal truth. Life cannot be divided into compartments, some of which God is involved and others which he is not involved. There cannot be one kind of language in the church and another kind of language in the shipyard or in the factory or in the office. There cannot be one kind of conduct in the church and another kind of conduct in the business world. The fact is, God does not need to be invited into certain departments of life and kept out of others. Here's where we get to our text. He is everywhere, all through life and in every activity of life. He hears not only the words which are spoken in his name, but he hears all words. And there cannot be any such thing as a form of words that evades bringing him into any transaction. We will regard all promises as sacred if we remember that all promises are being made in the presence of God. And that's good right there, because it shouldn't matter if it's a contract, an agreement, a contract between you and a person for business, or whether it be you just answering a question, and whether it happened right here in the church or whether it be taking place in a job place. It's all the same thing. And by God's standard, it should all be truthful wherever it's done and in whatever it's involved with, okay? And so there's the oaths. I told you last week I was hoping to get something a little bit easier. It wasn't a lot easier, but it was easier than last week. So next week it looks like we're going to talk about retaliation. If you have heard it, it's been said, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. So we're going to talk eyes and teeth next week, okay? So, all right, let's go ahead and stand. We'll be dismissed in a word of prayer.